56th Psalm. Psalm 56. We'll read the entire Psalm, 13 verses. Be merciful unto me, O God, for man would swallow me up. He fighting daily oppresseth me. Mine enemies would daily swallow me up, for they be many that fight against me, O Thou Most High. What time I am afraid, I will trust in Thee. In God I will praise His word. In God I have put my trust. I will not fear what flesh can do unto me. Every day they wrest my words. All their thoughts are against me for evil. They gather themselves together. They hide themselves. They mark my steps when they wait for my soul. Shall they escape by iniquity? In thine anger cast down the people, O God. Thou tellest my wanderings. Put thou my tears into thy bottle. Are they not in thy book? When I cry unto thee, then shall mine enemies turn back. This I know, for God is for me. In God will I praise His word. In the Lord will I praise His word. In God have I put my trust. I will not be afraid what man can do unto me. Thy vows are upon me, O God. I will render praises unto Thee. For Thou hast delivered my soul from death. Wilt not Thou deliver my feet from falling, that I may walk before God in the light of the living? This, we see from the subtitle, is the Psalm of David. And like all the Word of God, it's very beneficial to you and I, and also in this day in which we live. We see that it is a psalm that is filled with instruction. There's encouragement, there's assurance, there's hope, there's some exhortation to be found. There's certainly, the psalm is a challenge for you and I to live a particular life. You'll notice that it begins with an earnest appeal unto God. That is, be merciful unto me, O God. So there's a recognition there of great need. We also see that it ends with the ultimate goal of a particular kind of life to be lived. He says, that I may walk before God in the land of the living. So it begins with a prayer for mercy and ends with this ultimate goal of living a particular life. As you read through the psalm, there's no doubt that this is something that David felt deeply in his soul, something that greatly affected him. Throughout the psalm, we see David is trusting in the Lord. We also see that there's an intimate union between him and God. So we want to look at this psalm tonight, and the subject is a life of clinging and intimate union. And that should describe our life. Our life should be a life of clinging to the Lord. And our life, of course, should be a life of union with the Lord. And first of all, consider the circumstances under which the psalm was written. Again, we see in the subtitle of the psalm, we are told the occasion of the writing, when the Philistines took him in Gath. Now, the historical record of that would be 1 Samuel chapter 21, 1 Samuel chapter 22. And in that portion of Scripture, we see David fleeing from Saul, came to the city of Gath, and there he was arrested, seized by the Philistines, brought before the king, Achish. And David, out of fear and out of unbelief, remember, took matters into his own hands and pretended that he was insane. They, of course, just wanted to get rid of him at that point. So he was driven from Gath. And then in 1 Samuel 22 and verse 1, as he leaves Gath, we see that he went and hid himself in a cave called Adullam. And in that cave, David is all alone for a while. He's at rock bottom, feeling the failure of what he had just done, and a great humility comes over him. And I believe it's that situation when David wrote both Psalm 34 and this particular psalm, Psalm 56. We see there is an emotional tone about the psalm. We see the letter O, or the word O, R-O-H, occurs four times. It's an interjection, of course, and it's used to express in a range of emotion. We see the word in verse 1, "Be merciful unto me, O God," that shows emotion. We see it again in verse 2, "O thou most high," seems to be a sense of awe for the person of God. We see it again in verse 7, the last two words, "O God," and we see it again in verse 12, "Thy vows are upon me, O God." And again, that expresses a wide range of emotion. Verse 1, I believe you see the emotion of need. Verse 2, you see the emotion of awe. Verse 7, it's more of a sense of urgency. In verse 12, there's the emotion of obligation. But he speaks of the, in the psalm, he speaks of the intention of his enemies. In verse 1, notice he says, "For man would," didn't say they did, but they would. That is, left to themselves, and unless God intervened, this was their intent, this was their desire, "For man would swallow me up." And that statement also tells us something of the nature of his enemies, and that is seen in the word "swallow." He doesn't just say, for man would kill me. That's certainly true, but he says much more than that. He says, "For man would swallow me up," which again tells us something of their nature. They're like a ravenous beast, eager for blood. There was an eagerness about them to persecute David, to kill David, and that of course is referring to Saul and his men. And then in verse 2, we see he says, "Mine enemies would daily swallow me up." So there he adds the word "daily," showing us again the nature of the trial. It is an ongoing matter. This isn't something that just happened occasionally, something that came and then would go away for a few days. This was daily. Every single day their intent was to destroy David. And we see also the details. He speaks of the very details of his circumstances. In verse 1, he says they are fighting, that is, combating daily, oppresseth me. Once again, this is a daily thing, and they oppress me. That is, there was an ongoing persecution, and this persecution was designed to repress David. It was designed to subdue him. It was designed to depress him. It was designed to discourage him, to dishearten him, to weigh him down. Exactly what the world attempts to do to you and I every single day of our lives. The devil, of course, uses the world to oppress the child of God. And that is the intent of the devil. And that is the intent of our enemies as well. In verse 2, he says, "They be many that fight against me." And here we see he feels that he's in an overwhelming situation, far too many for him. We see in verse 3, he says, "What time I am afraid." So he admits that there were times in which he was fearful. He just came out of one of those times in Gath. But what he says there in verse 3, "What time I am afraid," it was a time that brought fear. So David experienced fear. Perhaps he didn't experience fear every single moment of every day, but there was fear. Fear was present. We also see in verse 5, he says, "Every day." That's the third time he's used that term, "every day." Every day, that is, again, this is continual. This is ongoing. Again, you take any trial, doesn't matter what it is, you take any trial, and if it's something that you can get away from every now and then, something you can get a break from, you can forget about it, it's much easier. But if it's there every single day, eventually, if you're not in a right state with God, that's going to wear you down. And this is what was happening with David. He was facing these things every day. He says, "Every day they rest," or "they twist, they fabricate my words. All their thoughts are against me for evil." So it was a time when he was feeling the malice, the malice of men. And this was, again, every single day. In verse 6, it says, "They gather themselves together." And as they gathered together, their malice intensifies. They gather together to talk about David. And when they do that, they just feed off of one another, and their malice for David intensifies, and the more lies they begin to tell about David, and the more intent they become on destroying David. It says they hide themselves. That is, the enemy is intelligent. They wait for the right opportunity. They don't just attack. They are waiting for their opportunity. It says they mark my steps, just as a hunter would mark the trail of their game. So they mark my steps when they wait for my soul. David was prey. David was being hunted down just like an animal. And he felt this every single day. In verse 7, he asks a question. He says, "Shall they escape by iniquity?" That shows the nature of their acts, and that is that it was sinful. The question is designed, is God going to let this go on due to the fact that they're sinning? In verse 8, he mentions my tears, speaking of his sorrow, speaking of his burden. In verse 13, he says, "Wilt thou not deliver my feet from falling?" So David felt the danger of slipping. He felt the danger of collapse. He has this everyday trial at the hands of his enemies. And there were times that David felt he was sure to fall, that he was going to collapse, that there was no way that he could continue day after day. So all of this was very real to David. All of this was present. Every time he woke up, there it was. It was ongoing. This is something that David felt very intensely. And these things, again, describe our everyday battle. They describe our everyday battle with the forces of evil. Perhaps not to the same extent of David, but we can identify with what David is saying. Now, in light of these circumstances, we want to notice the structure of the psalm, and we learn from the structure of the psalm how we are to behave under these circumstances. The structure of the psalm gives us instruction. The structure of the psalm serves as an example to you and I in the midst of the enemies of God. We need to realize today that, again, we mentioned the intent of the enemy. They would swallow me up. They would. If they could, they would. And we need to realize the intent of the enemies of God. If they could, if God would allow it, they would kill every single one of us. They would not tolerate us for another day. And David, of course, realized this to be true. So, notice again the structure. It is a psalm in which God is the central focus. You cannot read this psalm without realizing that the focus of the psalm really is not the circumstances. The focus of the psalm is God. That is the theme of the psalm. And this is how David endured this ongoing daily trial. His focus was upon the Lord. And reading through the psalm, you see the word God, that's the Hebrew Elohim, 9 times. You find it there in verse 1, verse 4, verse 7, verse 9, verse 10, verse 11, verse 12, verse 13. 9 times we have the word God, Elohim, indicative of His power and His faithfulness. The word Elohim stresses the power and the faithfulness of God. So 9 times he uses the name God. In other words, what he has in mind when he uses that name is the power of God. What he has in mind when using that name is God's faithfulness. He is also referred to as Lord, again, all capital letters, Jehovah, 1 time, verse 10. And that, of course, is indicative of his eternity, his immutability, that he will always be. He's also, in verse 2, referred to the Most High, referring, of course, to His majesty, His sovereignty. So that is 11 direct references to God. And in addition, there are 12 personal pronouns referring back to the Lord. So that's a total of 23 references to God. 13 verses, 23 references to the Lord. So throughout the psalm, God is the focus, and it's in relation to David's adverse circumstances. God is the focus in relation to the enemies of David. The lesson in that is that you and I are not to divorce our circumstances from God, and we are not to divorce God from our circumstances. Do not ever separate the two. We need to see our circumstances. We're not to dwell on our circumstances. We are to dwell on God in our circumstances, whatever those circumstances are, and we're not to separate the two, looking at them as two separate entities. So that's the lesson there. Now notice that God is the focus in the past. In verse 3, "Thou hast delivered my soul from death." So he thinks upon his past. He thinks about the times when the enemies of God would have killed him. But God, in miraculous ways, delivered his soul. All the times that Saul threw the javelin at David and missed. That was God delivering his soul. And on we go. We see God delivering his soul. And David recognizes that. So David looks back in the past. And as he looks back upon the past, what's he focused on? He's focused on God. We see also he focuses on the present and the future. He is focused upon God in the present. He is focused upon God in the future. And he acknowledges God in the present. And he acknowledges God in the future. Notice in verse 8, David speaks of God's awareness of him, his sympathy toward him. He says, "Thou tellest my wanderings." In other words, God could tell all of the wanderings of David because God knew them all. So he's saying that God is aware of his circumstances. He's focused on God in the present. "Put thou my tears into thy bottle, are they not in thy book?" Which shows that God was sympathetic toward David in the present. We see also in verse 13, he recognized again God has his deliverer. He recognized God as his present deliverer and future. "Wilt thou deliver my feet?" He says, "You've delivered me in the past. Will you deliver me now and even in the future?" So throughout the psalm, God is acknowledged. The lesson is that in no matter what our circumstances are, we need to follow Proverbs chapter 3, verse 6, "In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths." In all thy ways acknowledge God. That means recognize God. See God. See God's hand. See God's dealings. Be aware of God. Never lose sight of God. Never lose the sense of an awareness of God. We read in Proverbs 3, verse 7, "Be not wise in thine own eyes." And the way to do that is, again, to acknowledge God. "Fear the Lord and depart from evil." But we're to acknowledge the Lord in all circumstances. Never are we to become oblivious to God's working. Never are we to become oblivious to the person of God. We see also it is a psalm in which there is a personal intimacy. There is a connection between God and the psalmist. For those who believe that there is a God, and most people do, it's one thing to believe that there is a God. It's something entirely different to view him as connected with you, and you connected to him. Makes a world of difference. And we see David recognizes that there was a union between him and the Lord. And this is seen throughout the psalm. It is seen by the use of prepositions. Notice the preposition in. Relating to David's position, relating to David's relationship with the Lord. Notice verse 3 and verse 4. "What time I am afraid, I will trust in thee." He doesn't just say, "I will trust thee." "I will trust in thee." And some may say, "Well, I don't see the difference." Oh, there's a big difference. "I will trust in thee." In thee. This speaks of a very intense, a very deep trust. In verse 4, "In God I will praise His word. In God I have put my trust." So there again we see three times that word in verses 3 and 4 relating to God. But notice in verse 10 and verse 11, "In God will I praise His word. In the Lord will I praise His word." Verse 11, "In God have I put my trust." So we see that word in, again, it shows a relationship. Another preposition that we find in the psalm is unto, and it's related unto God. Notice verse 9 and verse 12. He says, "When I cry unto thee." It speaks of direction. In speaks of position. Unto speaks of direction. "I will cry unto thee." Verse 12, "Thy vows are upon me. I will render praises unto thee." It speaks of the direction in which David's heart is moving. His heart is moving in the direction of God. His enemies are everywhere, and this goes on daily, but David continues to move in the direction of God. And that is so, so very important, that no matter what our circumstances are, whether they be good circumstances or adverse circumstances, we are to keep moving in the direction of the Lord. We're never to move in the other direction. We're to always keep moving in the direction of God. Another preposition is the word upon. Notice verse 12, thy vows are upon me. Again, all of these are in relation to God with David, or David in relation to God. Notice also unto me in relation to God, verse 1, be merciful unto me. He's praying for God to move in his direction in a merciful way. Then notice the word for in verse 9. This I know, for God is for me. All of those prepositions speak of an intimate union between God and the psalmist. Again, it's one thing to believe theologically about God. It's another thing to believe God theologically and also to know who he is and have a relationship with him that carries on throughout our life. Also, it is a psalm of personal awareness. In the opening words there in verse 1, be. Again, this is continual. This is ongoing. His trial was continual. It was every day. His trial was ongoing. And now he's asking for God to be something unto him that is ongoing, continuous. Be merciful unto me. So there is a recognition in that very plea. There is a recognition of unworthiness. David realizes, I'm not worthy to be delivered from my enemies. In fact, I deserve to be swallowed up by them. I deserve to be destroyed by them. But be merciful unto me. It's also a recognition of personal need. So there's a recognition of unworthiness. There's a recognition of need. And all through our circumstances, doesn't matter if they're, again, good circumstances, adverse circumstances, really doesn't matter. We are to always be aware that we're unworthy. And we're to be aware of our need. And in declaring the intent of his enemies, he recognizes that they would fulfill their intention if God didn't intervene, or if David was left to himself, if David was left on his own, his enemies would fulfill their intention. In verses 3, he recognizes, he freely admits, that there will be times when he will be given over to fear. But recognizing that, he also recognizes his need for God in such times. Notice verse 4. After he says, what time I am afraid, then verse 4, in God I will praise his word. In God I have put my trust. I will not fear what flesh can do unto me. So he says, when I'm afraid, I'm going to trust God. And then God's going to remove that fear. I will not fear what flesh can do unto me. Notice those words. What flesh can do unto me. They can do things to us. The enemy can do things to us. What flesh will do unto me. But David says, I will not fear. And again, it's all based upon his relationship with the Lord. In God. In God. So that's the way to overcome fear. He also realizes, he recognizes his weakness in and of himself. In verse 13, when he prays that God would deliver his feet from falling. So he realizes that sometimes he's weak. He realizes that there is a danger that he might fall. There is a danger that he might deny God. There is a danger that he might fail God. Never ever become so self-confident that you do not think it's possible for you to fail God, for you to fall into some sin. People say, well, I would never do that. Well, you don't know that for sure. The only way you won't is if God helps you. And we need to say, by the grace of God, I will not do that. But again, he realizes his weakness. Also, it's a psalm of personal assurance concerning God. In verse 1, there's the assurance that God is merciful. Be merciful unto me, O God. Well, you wouldn't pray that unless you believed that God is merciful. So he has this assurance that God is merciful. And if there's one thing we ought to have assurance about, it is that God is merciful, because it's proven every single day that God is merciful to us. We see in verse 2, there is the assurance that God is majestically sovereign over all. He's the Most High. We need that assurance that God is over all things. You know, people say, well, God knows all about it. He sure does. And that must never just become a phrase. It must be something that we are absolutely certain of. Not only does he know all about it, he's in control of it. He's the Most High. And being the Most High, no one can usurp God. No one can go beyond the Lord. In verses 4 and 11, there's assurance that God can conquer fear. Again, in verse 4, he says, after he says he will trust God, he says, I will not fear what flesh can do unto me. And in verse 11, in God have I put my trust, I will not be afraid of what man can do unto me. So he has this assurance that God can conquer fear. He knows there's going to be times when he's going to fear. He knows there's going to be times when perhaps he's crippled by fear. But he knows that God can conquer that fear. So he puts his trust in the Lord. There's also the assurance that God is greater than all the evil intentions of man. In verses 4 and 11. I'll put my trust in God and I will not fear what man can do unto me. God is greater than the intentions of man. In verse 7, there's the assurance that God can defeat the enemy. In thine anger, cast down the people, O God. He was certain that God could defeat them at any time, and he could do so easily. There's also, in verse 8, there's the assurance that God, once again, sympathizes with his people. In verse 9, there's the assurance that God is for his people. For God is for me. And that's always true. It may not be true in God is for us in what we're doing. But as a child of God, God is for us. That is, he's for our benefit. That's always true. Now, we can be sinning. God's not for us sinning, of course, but he's for us. That is, he's going to take care of us. In verse 13, there's the conviction of God's delivering hand in the past and the assurance that God can deliver in the present and that God can deliver in the future. We see also it's a psalm of personal trust. In the midst of adverse and trying circumstances, God is the focus. There's a relationship, an intimacy between God and the psalmist. David is aware of his personal need. He has this assurance concerning the person of God. With all of those things being so, the logical thing to do now is to trust God. I mean, if you know all of those things, it's just logical. I'm going to trust God. And that's what we see here throughout the psalm. In verse 3, he says, I will trust in thee. In verse 4, in God I have put or placed my trust. We all have to place our trust somewhere. You place it somewhere. Again, everybody's trusting in something. Every lost sinner's trusting in something for their eternity. And every one of us, at all times, is trusting in something. And David says, In God I have put or placed my trust. In verse 11, in God have I put my trust. But in each one of those verses, it's personal trust. It's David saying, I trust the Lord. That is, it is a personal faith. It is a personal belief. It is a personal reliance upon God. It is a personal dependence upon God. It is a personal expectation from the Lord. And it is a commitment concerning God as He relates to ourselves and to our circumstances. So to trust conveys the idea of clinging. He is saying, I am clinging to God. My enemies are everywhere. Their intent is a daily intent. And I am clinging. I am cleaving to God. It expresses the notion of get a good grip upon God and don't let go. And that's what David is saying when he says, I trust the Lord. We see Israel. And several different occasions in the book of Deuteronomy and also in Joshua were exhorted to cleave to the Lord. That is, cling to the Lord. Get a hold of God. Do not let go. Barnabas exhorted the believers, the converts in Antioch. They're in Acts chapter 11 and verse 22. That with purpose of heart they would cleave unto the Lord. He knew that the people there were going to have trial. They were going to have affliction because of their belief. And he exhorted them, cleave unto God. Hold on to God. Trust God. And so many times, that phrase, trust the Lord, it's just a cliche. But it needs to be much more than that. Again, it's what enables us to endure, to cling unto God. It's like Jacob in Genesis 32 and verse 26. I will not let thee go. You remember the heavenly visitor, and he's wrestling, and he grabs hold, his hips out of joint, and he says, I will not let thee go, except thou bless me. And again, that needs to be our attitude. It needs to be our practice. In adverse circumstances, this is the kind of trust that we need. A trust that clings to God. A trust that tightens our grip upon God. And as circumstances grow worse, the tighter our grip ought to be and the more weight we lean upon them. This is not the time to trust God less. Need to be trusting Him more. And then through all the trials, We're not to loosen our grip upon Him. And we have this assurance that He does not loosen His grip upon us. That we do know. So this trust in God led Him to do some things. It led Him to pray. Verse 1, He begins with a prayer. That's what trust will do. Verse 7. He's praying. Verse 13, he's praying. Trust in God causes us to call out to Him, to Him. A people that trust God is a people that pray to God. To trust in God also gave him victory over fear. We've already seen it there in verse 4 and verse 11. This is the way of victory, is trust God. We have many failings, but trust in God is the way to overcome, and it's the way to overcome trials as well. This trust in God filled him with confidence. Not confidence in self, but confidence in God. Notice verse 9. When I cry unto thee, that's prayer. That's what someone who trusts God, that's what they're going to do. They're going to cry unto God. It doesn't do any good to cry unto everybody else. But you trust in God, cry unto Him. When I cry unto God, He says, when I do that, things are going to happen. He says, then, that is when I cry unto God, then shall my enemies turn back. So there's victory. And he was assured of this. And then notice what he says. This I know. Now, what is that phrase referring to? Well, again, grammatically, it can only refer to what went before. When I cry unto thee, then shall my enemies turn back. This, what he just said, this I know. David, how do you know that? For, because God is for me. I know this because God is for me. So you see, this trust in God gave him confidence. Gave him confidence of victory. It also filled him with resolve for God. In verse 3, verse 4, verse 11, and verse 12, he uses those two words, I will, I will, I will, I will. He had a resolve. And in all of his resolve, where was his focus? The Lord. We can resolve to do many things. Not all of our determinations are good. Not all of them are beneficial to us. That is why when we resolve to do something, our focus needs to be upon God. And you'll notice in verse 3, verse 4, verse 11, and 12, when you see that phrase, I will, it's in relation to God. His focus is upon God. I'm going to do this. And again, he's focused upon God. And then notice it's a psalm in which there is a feeling of personal obligation to the Lord. And when we're going through trial, we must never lose sight of our personal obligation to the Lord. He says, verse 12, thy vows are upon me, O God. That is the vows which David had made to God. He says, they're upon me. They're upon me as a weight. He felt an obligation to the Lord. And we must never, ever, ever lose sight of our obligation to the Lord. Our circumstances, however adverse they might be, do not release us from an obligation to God to bring glory to His name. And we see, lastly, we see this personal desire to live a life for God. Notice verse 13. He prays, he mentions past deliverance, he then prays for deliverance, and then he says that. The reason I want to be delivered, that. Not just so I can feel more comfortable, not just so life will be easier, that. For this reason, that I may walk before God. That's what God told Abraham in Genesis 17 and verse 1. He said, I am the Almighty. Walk before me. To walk before God. Psalm 116 and verse 9. I will walk before the Lord in the land of the living. So what does that mean? To walk before God. Well, I believe that it means that we realize that God sees and knows our hearts, our thoughts, our words, our actions. And in light of the fact that God knows all things about us, we are to walk with great caution and watchfulness. You're walking before God. You're not walking before man that you can lie to and deceive. You're walking before God. Be cautious. Be careful. Because He knows. Walk before God. He wanted a life lived before God. He wanted God to be His life. It's a life according to the will of God. It's a life that is pleasing to God, and no matter what else is going on in our life, this needs to be our consuming desire, that we walk before God, enjoying God, bringing glory to His name. So again, the 56th Psalm is a psalm of what we would call adverse circumstances. But in it, we see an example of how to live in the midst of those circumstances. We see our source of comfort. Our source of comfort is always going to be God. Always. Always go to God. When you need comfort, go to Him. Go to Him for whatever you need. Trust Him. Trust Him fully. We learn to trust God. It's something that we learn. It's something that we are learning. We never stop learning to trust the Lord. And sometimes, many times, the Lord brings or causes trials to enter our life to teach us to trust Him. Sometimes God will remove all other earthly props. And people have the wrong perspective on that. They'll say, oh, that's terrible. That's terrible. Not if they learn to trust God in it, it isn't. That's a good thing. It's sad, but sometimes that's what God has to do, is to remove every prop that we're leaning upon so that He's the only one left. Because that's our nature. Our nature is, we'll go to God when there's nothing left. I mean, that's what we're prone to do. So God many times sends trials, sends adverse circumstances in our life, that there's only one place we can go, and that's the Lord. How many times God's people, lost people, sit at the side of a bedside of a loved one that's suffering, dying, and there they are for days and weeks. And they'll say, oh, when this is over, I'm going to serve the Lord. You can mark it down, Brother Dan, when this is over, I'll be in church Sunday. Sunday comes and they're not here. But at that moment, I believe they mean that at that moment. Because at that moment, all the props are gone. They only have God. They only have Him. The sad thing is, after it's over, they forget all about it. And they're going to forget about it until God removes all the props once again. We don't want to be that way. We don't want to be where God has to remove all earthly props for you and I to trust Him. We just want to wake up in the morning trusting God, and going through the day trusting God, and going to bed at night trusting the Lord. Because in truth, that's all we have. When you get right down to it, that's all you got, is the Lord. So David, in this psalm, gives us wise, it serves as a wise example. Trust the Lord. Just trust Him. Brother Tim, if you'd come and lead us.